don't want to see you coming back in here with dirty junkies. I want to see you coming back in here with bloodstained junkies.
How could anybody go and sit in a pint with those boys after that?
And the referee is looking around and acting as Mickey.
Tell the children to play tennis or something.
If they want to play tennis, go and play tennis.
Morris, is it Ron? Mick, someone, hello and welcome to the Three Man Weave podcast, where we're reflecting on an incredible weekend of GAA action, where we saw Killincare book their place in the Junior B League final on Saturday evening. They will, of course, take on Drumalee this weekend. It's a packed show today where we're going to be previewing that final along with the Ulster football final on Sunday. We're only 6 days out now. I was hoping to be joined by Maurice Brosnan and Mick McCarthy, but both of them seem to have taken some sort of vow of silence. Mick is so depressed that he refused to put butter on his sandwich today because the yellow reminded him of Clare. And Maurice has taken to wearing a jumper out of protest that has every colour under the sun on it except maroon. Lads, are you excited about the two finals this weekend?
I'm going to stand in here and put an end to that travesty. Firstly, Mark, if you listened to my slot on Radio Kerry yesterday, you would have heard I was introduced as a Kerry man. So therefore, it was a great weekend for me.
A Kerry man. Oh, yeah. Sell out.
Secondly, we're not going to talk about that today. We're going to review all of the weekend's games.
Inter-county hurling football. Not in Killincare, Cavan, Junior B, Division 2.
Well, that's a disgrace.
Although, well done. We should all head down to your final next Saturday.
Please don't. Couldn't handle that pressure.
We'll start with Galway, I think, because I better get it over and done with.
Football or hurling?
The football,
it was a tough weekend for you, Morris.
It was, yeah. It certainly was. A really weird weekend in that the Saturday felt like, you know, you felt somewhat reflective about it. Like, there wasn't that huge amount of emotion. It was more so like, you obviously, you know, there's a lot of disappointment, but at the same time, it's like the fine marriage in the sport. You know, if they'd beaten Wexford in that really tight draw down there, it just wouldn't have happened, or scoring difference. It's understandable, and you feel kind of contemplative about it.
And plus, you've been in three of the last five All-Ireland finals and won one a couple of years ago.
Yeah, what I'm saying, like, there's some sort of, like, you can process this, and there's some sort of rationality to it. And then Sunday came, and it was just blind rage. Like, it was like every, you know, curse under the sun, and you're thinking, oh, what's the point in any of this? Like, can we just throw the footballers out or put the hurlers in instead of them?
not the best performance from Galway, I have to say. My long-standing kind of rage at Kevin Walsh's style of play, I think only kind of, like, I was hoping that I was wrong. You know, that we talked about that on Friday. I really wanted to not like that to evolve in a way that, like, I was here saying, look, hands up, Kevin Walsh has, you know, he's evolved, you know, with the job. They obviously had to set their, you know, set the basics and then evolve from there and all that. But 100% not wrong. Like, you know, and everyone from Galway that like reacted, that tweeted me back yesterday afternoon, agreed with me. There wasn't one single person defending Walsh or the style of play or like basically the fact that this team is in shackles.
But even the we'll talk about the game in a second, the Galway's Common Con final in 1 second, but the premise of the argument, right? Like this thing about, you have to remember where Galway came from. Yes, you do, in that they were like at a really low ebb, but you know, like, you can still improve a team and not be have them at their potential. Like, when you're at your lowest ebb, the fact that you've somewhat improved, that doesn't mean you're maximizing your potential at all. It means you're moving in the right direction. And initially what Kevin Walsh did actually was try to adhere to all this attacking protocol, but they got torn apart by Roscommon that year, the 9-point defeat in 2017, and you reverted to what they did last year, which was to try and, you know, like, you can't take defense and attack in isolation. We're going to talk about this. We talked about it last week, and I'm going to bring it back up again today.
Have you been doing some more stats?
But that's, you know, it's the same principle. Like, you can't look at these in isolation, and they're, once again, you know, it's the same thing. You know, you're robbing Peter to pay Paul. They're actual shot, you know, in terms of concede, is really strong. I mean, it's not like they concede very few scores. The problem is that in doing so, there's literally no plan. Like, it looks, in the second half, it looked brain dead the way they were attacking. And I think there's something a lot more fundamental than, you know, just players not doing it. Like, that's obviously one element of it. But the best example of it all was the moment after Farher came on. He was brought on too late, in my opinion. But Farher came on, was driving in front of the goal. And I, like, countless times I've seen him playing for Carfin and slot the ball over the bar in that position. Like the countless times he's driving the goal, but because he's after making a big long run and the conversion of that is slightly lower, he recycles the ball out wide and ended up going for a meager shot going wide. And I thought if there was one play that epitomised how poor Galway were at the weekend, it was that one.
Mark, you'd have a Pat Spillane-ism for this, one of your favourite ones. No? Paralysis by analysis.
Yeah, like there is the other thing we talked about a couple of weeks ago where teams are, especially if you're actually a team that I think has played a blanket defence like Galway do, because you're up against it in training every week, where you almost go into blanket defence mode. So Galway, whatever about their defensive, you know, when you say, you know, it's an issue that they've got too many men back or whatever when they turn the ball over, but they don't seem to know how to transition quickly. Like Roscommon were getting players back,
but, yeah, and
so
they
then
used to,
Galway though. Just turned their back on the, like if we talked about it in terms of the, to see a blanket form in the front end, you go, all right, blanket defence time, patience, spread it wide, recycle. And it's like, hang on a second, maybe there's actually, you could face the goal and see if there's a hole somewhere. That like sometimes, yeah, you know, you just need to, a tactic to break down blanket defence isn't just hold on to the ball forever.
Yeah, they're working towards some sort of goal. Like there has to be something at the end. Like, you know, patience is a virtue, but time is gold. Like you can actually try and move quickly when you're trying to transition that initial phase. That's
that
a, one
the
of, like,
tagline to your GA analysis. Patience, what was it? Patience is a virtue, but time is gold.
Yeah, a coach used to say that to us a lot, actually. A coach, funnily enough, a coach was a selector at Galway this year. used to tell us that one back when I played for Barna. One of the things that's really frustrating to me about Galway, I thought the goalkeeper section was wrong, and that paid out in the game. You know, the Galway do this box kick out thing where they have kind of four pillars really, really close to each other. So their probability of winning a ball in and around that is always quite strong. But once O'Carrying went off, which was a huge loss, I mean, the pointy kick was great. He looked, you'd be devastated for him given, well, coming back from the injury, he had a really nasty injury and to come off so early. And then Shane Walsh is too close to goal, and when they need primary ball winners off their own kickouts, it doesn't come out, neither does Daly. So it ends up in a situation where Cook is tired, he comes off and Finn is trying to catch every single kickout by himself. So again, that looks like there was a lack of a plan. Like there was no, seems to be no overall structure there. But beyond that, right, like this thing about how you move when, like, Galway can, whatever, you know, you can see the 113, but how you attack off that, it's like that's where Galway are so kind of brain dead, really. Like, and you don't want to be too harshly critical either, but at the same time, like the amount of times where they don't have enough attackers in their back six, right? So you've got, like, in my view, you've got four defenders who aren't that good attackers. They're very good defenders, better than they're given credit for at times, but they're not good actually in terms of actually attacking and getting up with the play. So because of that, in the first half, few situations where, particularly before halftime, you've got a half forward line who play deep and are running onto the ball, coming off a shoulder, like these angled runs, and it actually looks really intricate and intelligent, and it comes off, you know, with a lot of scores. But then when Roscommon start slowly withdrawing back, which is what they do,
yeah,
and Galway don't kick the ball, like kick the ball forward, so you allow them to just come back along with the play, and then you hit that wall, and there was after that there's no plan. It's,
yeah,
just
you don't
recycle.
Yeah, they don't even kick the ball. Like, it's not that they don't even kick the ball forward, they do what Mark says, and this is the one thing I can't get over. It's like, oh, here's the blanket, turn around, and we see Cook do it a number of times, Shane
back
Walsh was doing it as,
yeah,
well, and run backwards, like taking two solos. You know, you're talking like eight steps at full pace backwards before you turn around and start again with nobody behind you. Like, you're not getting away from anyone. You're just trying to start from even deeper. And then from there, go nowhere. So it's not like it's just passing across, this jogging with the ball. You see every team doing it a little bit, but it was constant with Galway. And just the last thing is that there was that, right, and they weren't taking anything with that. But it was like every team does that a little bit, right? They don't do it as consistently as Galway did it yesterday. What I couldn't understand was that when it happened, they weren't looking for that original break. They weren't trying to, like, even just running with the ball themselves, never mind kicking it in, just of finding that hole before the blanket is formed, which Roscommon have similar enough style at times to what Galway did. But when they got the chance, when they won the ball or when they got into that situation, they went. And they got a load of scores off that in the second half. Galway never even tried it.
Yeah, that's what you need. Someone come, like, say Peter Cook gets the ball in that situation, whoever's giving it to him or somebody else needs to be coming off the shoulder there. Probably actually two or three different people coming at different angles that ask the questions. It's almost like a basketball screen where he's holding the ball, he just gives it off to someone for a 1-2 or something, rather than having no option. He's probably coming running backwards because he's expecting someone that you don't have to turn, that he shouldn't have to turn face goal and go at them himself.
Yeah, that's it's not always the player in possession's fault either. Like, that's not what I mean. But
yeah, and I also don't even think it's always the player's fault. Like, the Mark, we spoke about
players plural.
As a collective. I mean, there's obviously massive failings in terms of just basic skill execution that was quite poor. The thing with the kickouts that nobody assumed responsibility there was really, you'd be really critical of that. But as a whole as well, like we spoke about, when people watch Cavan and you see this thing, you know, 50% of balls being moved out wide, the positions, Martin Riley standing out really, really wide, the way Keane Mackey floats around, the movement we spoke about with McVitie, and there's actually a piece up on site about that as well. Like, that's not spontaneous. No. That's part of, there's a plan. There's something there beyond that, that they're actually planning for that. And the amount of times, Dublin are another classic example of this. Like, if a Dublin player doesn't get on the ball, you don't see him stand and fill the space in front of his own players. Like, their movement in and around that, there's a coordination and an organization. There's an entire, like, and this is because, like, not to go too, so it's like Galway, for example, right? Galway spent a lot of time in St. Mary's, played a huge amount of basketball this year. Kevin Walsh was a really talented basketball player, and you see in defense the elements of that, like, they're actually kind of clever in terms of how they cut off space and stuff like that. But if you dedicate all your priorities, all of them, to defense, and you don't build an attacking, you don't plan for how you attack as a team, it's a total waste of time. Like, because as we've always say, they're interlinked, and I know it's not that simple, but it's still such a massive failing for a team that have as many good attackers as Galway do, that they don't have a proper plan for that,
and they're missing like Comer, Conroy. Right? Like, that's not nothing. But at the same time, the one place they can handle it is in attack. Like, if you look at the players, you look at Walsh, Burke, Daly. They're good enough.
Yeah.
But you look at that team. You look at the way their midfield is lined up. You look at the team on paper, the old way of like the traditional 15 layout. Nobody's going to play like that. But you think that's a good football team.
Yeah.
That's really well balanced. There's a lot of kind of, you know, there's big players, small players, there's a good strong midfield, you know, Flynn in midfield with a bit of I know what you're saying about you want more attacking kind of wing backs or whatever, but you're thinking that's a good football team. They should be a good team going forward. And that has to be, I know that can't be just about six forwards anymore. It needs to be more about the team, but it still should be good. And it's just not the way they play. And the way they do play, I don't think does suit that lineup that you look at. You know what I mean? You almost have too many forwards to play that way.
Or even if it's just kind of really elementary stuff, like you could bring
real forwards. For
example, like if Ian Burke and Shane Walsh aren't getting the ball as the way they are, like you can actually adapt to that. Like, you can adapt to the circumstances in front of you. You don't need to bring Farragher on with 2 minutes left. Like, that, these are all really, really elementary changes that aren't happening. And I think this Galway team got a huge, huge amount of praise for their improvements and for kicking on to the Super 8s last year. And rightly, because of what they did over the last 4 years. But equally, this is a huge failing. Like, they deserve a similar amount of criticism for what happened at the weekend as a collective, like, whether that be managers or players. What happened at the weekend, and we'll talk about Roscommon in a second, because I'm sure. But, like, I think, Roscommon haven't really blown me away, to be honest, like as a whole this year, the amount of times I've seen them. Because I thought Galway were awful at the weekend, absolutely awful, and they were within a kick of a ball at the end in terms of the goal chance. Sorry, they were awful in the second half. I thought the first half showing was quite impressive. But Galway were still a kick of a ball, like the goal chance at the end there where Daly pulls the ball wide, away from drawing the game.
I think Roscommon, I think you do have to give him a little bit more credit, and we'll talk about it in a sec.
But no,
we
don't.
But, and we should mention that me and Morris had a bad weekend. Clare were out of the hurling, but Galway were, you know, beating them both out of the hurling as well, out of the football. The worst of all for Cavan is the week before, the week before Cavan are in the Ulster final, anything that they can do, Roscommon can do better. Roscommon are Connacht champions. That's,
I hadn't actually thought of it in the context of us playing in the Ulster final. How about just the rivalry was coming? But now that you said it, for feck's sake.
Trumped
us.
Yeah. Oh, they absolutely have. Yeah, no matter what you do next week, they had the pitch invasion before you did. They had the pitch invasion before the match was even over.
Do you remember when we were doing the Talking Point show with Sky Sports a couple of summers ago? And I made this exact point about Roscommon 2 years ago. That I literally said to you here, or we were shooting it in the studio, and I literally said to you on the couch, and I think David Brady might have been on with us that day, where I just went on this rant about Roscommon, and that anything Cavan does, Roscommon has to go one better. And here we are, 2 years later, and what has happened in the two intervening years? They've beaten us in the league final, they've gotten to the Super 8s, and they've won the Connacht Championship. It's ridiculous. Stop it.
We should give them some praise because
that was my 30-second moment.
I actually, I forgot to prepare one this week. Maybe there's nothing to moan about. I feel like we should talk about Anthony Cunningham. The last thing on Galway though, before you said, is your point there about the criticism they deserve. I think they're getting it because that's what I was saying earlier. I haven't seen anybody like say, "Ah, sure, it was a bad day at the office," or "Oh, you know, Roscommon are a good team." Or people watch that match, and when you're a negative team, rightly or wrongly, you put yourself up for that criticism if it doesn't go well, more than an attacking team will probably get that bit of leeway and look, yeah, it's a process and, yeah, you know, they'll get that defense.
Results is the be all and end all. Yeah.
Galway aren't going to get the defense, and I haven't seen it. I've seen a lot of anger from, like, it's from you and from people in the county, that's fine, but from neutrals who just want Galway football to be better and see the players that are out there, people are just pissed off at what they watch yesterday.
If you have an attacking plan in your defensive team, you actually kind of can escape the criticism.
Yeah.
Like, I think that's what they sort of, like, say Donegal are a defensive team. They bring very back sweepers.
Yeah.
But they don't get the criticism because you actually don't know that. And it's one of these things you talk about myth busting, Morris, but that there's another myth out there that teams are not defending. You know, like, you don't get these same, the blanket defenses are gone. Yeah, Dublin
three sweepers against Kildare.
Dublin,
like,
bring back 15 players in their own half so often. But it's because of what they do when they have the ball that people don't notice it as much.
That's all I was going to say.
The Cavan Armagh match a few weeks ago, that was great. Two blanket, well, especially Armagh had a blanket defence against Cavan the first day.
Defensive is probably even the wrong word these days. It's more about what you do on offence. Yeah. You know, it's like, what are you doing? And it's like, do you have any offensive plan? Because that's what Galway didn't have. It's not about what you do when you don't have the ball anymore, I don't think. I think everybody expects a blanket.
The best example of that, by the way, just a last point to this. Like, so Galway had 32 attacks. They had 12 scores. 15 times out of 32 attacks, they gave the ball away in that final third that I talked about last week. Like, 15. Like that. Anyway, the best example about terms of planning for that. Do you remember in the All-Ireland final last year when Dublin had every single player, 15 players behind the ball, Tyrone were attacking, and they turned over the ball, and Owen Merchant, like, sprinted, literally head down, sprinted up the other end of the field because the only way that transition was going to work in that scenario is if they kick the ball. So you have to kick the ball forward. And sure enough, he stretched the play by sprinting ahead. A cornerback ran up the other end of the field and received the ball. And the reason he did that so that they can actually get that initial boost, that transition there up at the top. And, like, sometimes it's something as that simple, but he didn't, like, that wasn't, that idea just didn't land in his head. Like, that's been built in. That's something that's ingrained. When you see players doing something elsewhere, like 3 months ago we saw what Farher did in terms of his kicking ability and the way he plays, like, there's something more ingrained. He doesn't just lose that spontaneously. Like, there's something more fundamental to that, you know, he's been straitjacketed.
Yeah, and you could actually see it yesterday. It was very evident in the second half with Roscommon, because there was so often that Galway would be playing around in front of that blanket, and then it would break down and it was like a yellow wave just going up the field.
Yeah, and players beyond the play. Galway have this weird thing. There's like a moth defence. Like, they all descend when they get a chance trying to turn over a ball, and then one or two will break out of that thing. Whereas you see with Roscommon, like, they have runners coming from nearly all sides. It's not just one player. Like, there was in the very first half, the Daly's ball inside into Cox. But on the other end of the other side of the pitch, Enda Smith, who had been behind the play, was sprinting on the other wing. Just in, like, it's as an alternative, like, it doesn't become as predictable. Me and Mark have given Roscommon no praise.
Yeah,
but you were impressed with them.
I was impressed with them. I've been impressed with them all year. He just doesn't like them. He doesn't think they're shit like you do. I know you don't actually think they're shit, but I think that, like, you know, you can take. I don't want to turn into John Giles, but you take each game on its merits and what, like. They've beaten away, and they've
Gaelic
beaten Galway
teams
away.
Could defend when they needed to defend, and attack when they needed to attack. Sorry, I give up on the John Giles impression. I just went into my own voice.
They've gone away from home to beat Mayo and Galway both. That's the hardest kind of championship you're ever going to win. And this is James Horan's back at Mayo, and look. Did they shoot themselves in the foot? Did both Mayo and Galway shoot themselves in the foot in the games? Yes. That's the only, like, that has to, they didn't do it on their own either, you know? Like, Roscommon played a part in that. And also, they were so dogged in both games. Like, that game was all but over at halftime, you would have thought, yesterday. And by the 40th minute, there was a point in it. Because Roscommon came out and just decided, you know, we're going to do something about this. And then they stayed with it, and were so much the better team in the second half. They've got really, really good forwards, I think. Cox has been a revelation, obviously, but I thought the lads around them, I thought Murta was brilliant yesterday. I thought that's the best I've seen Enda Smith playing a long time. And I just thought they were very, very good. And I think that what Cunningham has done, I think just even as a GEA man, we should take this into account, from going from what he did with Gary Castle to the Galway Hurlers to the Dublin Hurlers last year, you know, getting them kind of back on track under Gilroy, and then to go back to football again and take on Roscommon and win a Connacht title in his first year, beating Mayo and Galway away. I think it's one of the best GAA stories I've ever heard, and people are kind of used to Anthony Cunningham, so they're not talking about it that way. Like,
yeah, and like the way I would kind of look at it, like maybe I mean like a slightly harsher look at Roscommon, but like when I look at Roscommon, I see a really kind of simplistic plan. Like, that's, I mean, not simplistic in terms of being like necessarily that easy to prevent, but like it is limited in a certain field. Like, it needs teams to play into their hands for it to work, which Galway and Mayo both did to a certain extent. In saying that, like, I think I like a lot of it, and I think I spent a lot of time thinking about that Anthony Daly column that we spoke about recently, Mick, where he talked about, you know, there is obviously an interlink between systems and play, but there is real fundamentals that certain teams are falling down on because of their obsession with systems and stuff. And it's about, like, turning up and, you know, fight your conditioning, that kind of stuff, like, before you, like, your determination, the old cliches that were thrown out in years gone by, but they're still just as important. And I think Cunningham actually embodies a lot of that. Like, the players who embody it, by the way, are the Daly brothers. Like, that's so much of what Cunningham is about, in terms of, like, they don't give an inch. They're kind of, you know, like, bit of, kind of shithousery, like, the in your face, the teeth tough. They'll, whether you're, you know, a Marishka or a player, they're getting into your face and they're sledging you, and if you touch them, they're going down. But there's also something about them that's like, we're going to match you blow for blow here. And, you know, maybe in terms of ability, they're slightly lesser than what they're doing, but because they have that, because they kind of, they're willing to go and bully teams, that I think it, and that embodies a lot about of what Cunningham was about. And that was like, that was something Roscommon lacked last year. They were like, they looked physically totally outclassed in the Super Race last year, in terms of they were just overrun, especially the Tyrone game at the end just looked so. That was obviously something that they definitely needed. I also think it shows up, by the way, like, you see here coaches talking about, you know, 4 years plans and stuff like that. Like, the real test for Roscommon will to see how they actually do fare in a Super Eights compared to how they did last year. And I think we'll learn a lot more about them then. So, it's not as if, like, I wouldn't be anyway critical of
of
Roscommon.
I just wonder sometimes as well, if you're in a small county like Roscommon and you've got a good group of players there now, I don't think you've time to wait for a round for 4 year plans or anything like that. You just use it, like, you know, you're not going to have Dermot Murta and Enda Smith there forever. You know what I mean? And that's a, you know, and now like Cox as well. I'm missing a few, you know, but this for a small county with a small population, this is a very, very good group of footballers. And they're after winning two Connacht titles in the last 3 years. And for me, I think days like yesterday, the obvious thing is to talk about Galway because they were so poor by their talent level, but it's also like, that was an incredible scene in Salt Hill yesterday. The celebrations even going into today are, you know, I'm not going to make a comment about the provincial championships or structure or anything like that, but it's what we want in a summer, some way, shape or form. It doesn't have to be in Connacht finals or
just
anything.
Just last thing, what do you think of the pitch invasion? It's brilliant, but there's a part of me who's like, geez, these players, they don't even get a chance. They don't even get to the final whistle. Never mind.
The referee handled it well, actually. Didn't he just stop? And I thought he Barry. Was... I was like, he's heard, a replay.
It's like he's herding cattle.
But everyone was just kind of casually walking off with smiles on their face. But I did kind of wonder where they all went, because there was thousands of them.
Like. Yeah, but like the early pitch invasion aside, like, just straight after the final whistle, it, like, the photos are brilliant. You see one up on Instagram of Conor Cox just
up on the shoulders
like,
of the flag.
The way the photo taken, it looks like there could have been 50,000 Roscommon people for as far as the eye could see, because they're all full. But like, there is a thing that, like, if you've gone soldiering with these players for the championship, I wouldn't say an entire championship of three games, but if you've done that, surely you deserve a little moment. Maybe it's like an organised pitch invasion or something that you allow them.
Well, I completely agree with you. And I was, when the Croke Park started not letting people on and you see the lapse of honour and you're thinking, right, this is actually what it should be. They're there able to celebrate with their friends and stuff. But when I was in Thurles last year, when Claire Beth Tip qualified, knocked Tip out, big... you know, come back, a lot of kind of emotion there, and there was a natural pitch invasion. I nearly went on because I thought I'd meet someone. I hadn't seen any of the people that I normally go to the game with, and went on. And hearing from the Clare players after that, they talked about how that even means more to them. And that was like, there was that kind of sense of occasion. that comes from like a pitch invasion, and that just sense of like, even though it might be a disaster having to try to run back in, ultimately it's just fans and people that you've kind of that are admiring what you do, slapping you on the back. You know what I mean? You've won a game. There's really not that much negative to it. You know what I mean? It's people just saying, "Well done, lads." You know, and how proud they are, and you see that emotion. And I think it really, I think when you see what Roscommon did yesterday with that emotion, I don't think you really lose anything from that, because that's as much, that means as much to them from the fans as it does from the players.
Just very quickly, my favourite pitch invasion of the weekend wasn't that Roscommon one, it was the Kilkenny fan that came up to Davy Fitz. discovered they're voting the final and he starts whacking him.
Beside Cody, yeah.
There was an Offaly fan who tried to attack the referee in the John McCullough Cup
away by
as well.
Offaly players, yeah.
That wasn't funny. No, that was loud mead stuff. Like,
that wasn't
was
in
really
our top
bad,
three favourite of the weekend, I'd say.
Mick, you mentioned the emotion of the day. That was quite obvious there. And if there's one man who's perfectly placed to reflect that, I think it's Willie Haggerty. And we can hear his brilliant commentary on that now.
Is that the winning score? The man that came from Kerry, Conor Cox, has kicked an unbelievable score.
Now watch this.
And Roscommon lead by 3 points. Roscommon won 12. Galway have 12 points. But Galway go on the attack. They've lost possession. Malloy's got the ground. And Roscommon robbed him with Niall Kilroy. Kilroy has it. We have 1 minute to play, Nigel. Niall Kilroy goes to ground. And Roscommon win a free. Conor Cox. They're talking about Rockall, the fisherman of Ireland and Scotland. But Anthony Cunningham has been the fisherman of the year. The catch of the year has been Conor Cox. Roscommon have done it in 2019.
Oh, Willie, this is unbelievable.
The crowd are on the field for the second time in their history. The second time in the match. Nigel Janine, Roscommon are Connacht champions.
Oh, it's absolutely fantastic, Willie. There's people falling all over the pitch. There's people knocking each other off the ground. It's absolutely fantastic. The scenes here, Willie, just reminds me back in Castlebar when they bet me a couple of weeks ago. And now again, lads, they see the crowd. It's just fantastic, lads. Roscommon and Andy Cunning have done this. Rossi's proud. They're absolutely fantastic. What a game, really. 2 points Galway scored in the second half. Roscommon scored, 1-7? Unbelievable. Brilliant play.
1-8.
Absolutely fantastic. What a team. What a management performance. And you know, the supporters got behind them. It's just one of the greatest games in history.
This will go down as the managerial last second half in the history of Gaelic football.
The wonderful Willie Haggerty from Shannonside FM there, lads.
Yeah, I just wanted to actually talk about, we give out so much on every show, pretty much every podcast, or anyone's GAA podcast, any GAA.
We just give out in general.
Media platform that isn't RTE television. We give out about the television coverage of GAA. But if we forget about the television coverage for a second, the radio coverage is incredible. Whether it be like local radio coverage, you talk about it often, and Willie's a perfect example of it. But even the RTE stuff, like, I was in the situation Saturday night and Sunday where I had to listen to some of the games while driving in the car. So I was going to a match, got to hear some of the Kerry Offaly game. That was sounded absolutely brilliant on RTE. Then on the way home, I was listening to the, when you have two games on at the once, it's at the same time, it's brilliant as well, because you had the Dublin Galway game and the Kilkenny Wexford game. Again, really enthralling. Then Sunday, the exact same thing. John Milan sounded like he was about to have a conniption. He should be given.
he's amazing.
There should be, like, to have all this shit now with, you know, internet radio and RTE Gold and whatever, XXYZFM you can get wherever you want. There should be a 24-hour a day GAA radio station, which is just John Milan doing co-commentary on random games from the entire.
That's what I was going to say. Is like, find John Milan, tell him, do you know who won the Munster semi-final between Limerick and Clare in 1992? Jeez, no, I wouldn't know. Right, John, in you come. This is your...
Now across live to John Milan, who's midway through his commentary of the 1894 Ireland final. Well, there's 10 minutes to go here. It's no score to one score.
There is a, like, there's something amazing as well about particularly local radio commentary in terms of the sense of occasion it gives you. Like, just to, quickly on Shannonside, actually. What Shannonside did brilliantly there, right? They had their commentary on, and then beside them, Galway Bay and RTÉ Gaelic were beside them as well. And while they went to a break, Willie Hegarty turned and got Sean Bann on to come on to talk about from a Galway perspective. So he came on to talk about, like, I think he called it the worst weekend covering Galway GAA in his career, and reflected the, like, reflected kind of the feeling, like, so you, it was like the, in one 30 second spinach, you got the joy and despair of this occasion. Like, it was perfectly summarized. It was nobody else could have reflected it as well as the two boys did. And I think that, like, that is what, like, I actually, we should have talked about this more beforehand, but I 100% agree with you. Like, I do think it's something that is to be celebrated.
Yeah, definitely.
I'll you know, didn't go to NS yesterday for various reasons, and one of them being I want to actually watch games a little bit more this year, because I was up and down to the Clare matches all year last year, and I felt like I saw no football and I saw no other hurling either. So, but obviously I was stuck without being able to watch a game that obviously started well. So I was listening to Clare FM while watching the Tip Galway game, or Tip Limerick game, and you know there's ups and downs to that, one being every time you hear a whistle on either one you think something's happened. But the, it was Cill O'Connor, people will remember from the 2013 All-Ireland, I think Niall Gilligan with him, I'm not sure on that, but their just sense of excitement and passion for everything that happened. Every Clare score in the second half sounded like the greatest point ever scored in Cusick Park. You know, it was like this, how did he do that, that was unbelievable. You know, but it was actually the moment I really was like enjoyed listening to them, was just when Patrick Horgan got his second goal, it took it back to a point. And at this stage, there was 4 points in it in Limerick, and there was a good 10 minutes left. We weren't out by any stage, by any means at this stage, you know. And Horgan got the goal, and it was this like sense of commentary building up, building up, building up, and then silence, and oh no. Oh no, that it's in the back of the net and Cork as well. And it's just brilliant because it's so partisan, and every, you know, you really, if you're listening as a fan, you experience them talking to you as fans. Yeah. And it's that's I think irreplaceable. And that's why I'd always listen to that rather than even the national coverage, which is brilliant. And if I'm listening to a neutral game, there's nothing like John Milan, you know.
I would love it if Cork beat them. Yeah. Also, can we talk about the fact that when I was walking out, Stan, one of them turned to the other and went, Ashford, it's great to be back in Division 1.
I've kept really quiet, but I'll tell you something. He went down in my estimation when he said that. We have not resorted to that.
Let Cork beat them and then Cameron Tipperary go.
But I'll tell you, you can tell him now if you're watching it, we're still fighting for this title.
And I'll tell you now, they're still fighting for this title. And they've got to go Cork and get something.
And he's got to go to Middlesbrough and get something.
I think they're at home against Cork.
We just say things like that.
They're at home against Cork there.
And I'll tell you, honestly, I will love it if we beat them. Love it.
I would love it if Cork beat them.
Love it.
Love it.
Love it.
Love it.
Love it.
We might as well talk about some games now because we're halfway into this podcast and we haven't touched on what was an incredible weekend of hurling. Kilkenny Wexford, we'll start there, I think. There's a lot of elements to this game that will be discussed in the coming days and weeks, but the one thing that I'm totally fascinated by is the psychology of both managers and the way they can like manage their players. I'm just so fascinated by like how Brian Cody can get a guy like Adrian Mullen who, like, to my mind, it was near like a humiliation to be taken off 2 minutes before the break. And I thought, I was convinced.
Which game is this?
So when Galway played Kilkenny, Mullen was taken off just before half time, but 2 minutes before the break. And I remember saying at the time, we won't see him again for the rest of the summer. Like, he'd been a huge amount of expectation and he had a great year with his club, but maybe a year too early. And then he turns around like less than a week later and puts in one of the best performances we've seen this summer. Not only his goal, but the amount of times he got on the ball, like out in front, finding space in a suffocating Wexford defence. Like Cody's ability.
He looked a foot taller, didn't he? Sorry to interrupt, but he just like he actually did. Yeah. He just seemed like he was taking up more physical space than he did against Galway, where he's, I don't know, he wasn't, obviously he wasn't stooped, but it's almost in your head that he just seemed like he was just a bigger man, I have to say.
And even the confidence of him to like his goal chance, it's a really difficult thing to do because the ball was aimed away from the defender. Like he's running across the goal and the ball is aimed into that corner to try and get him as far away from the defender. But if he continues on that run, he's running away from goal and maybe he'll get a point or maybe he'll be shepherded out towards the sideline. So he actually jumps back, like bounces back against the play after catching the ball, totally blindsides the defender and the goalkeeper. Like Fanning has conceded a goal in ages, but he was totally caught by the way he moved back, like the confidence to try and run, like, for all he knew there could have been someone coming to streamline him there, but to try that kind of little jink back in terms of movement, I thought was brilliant. And then you've got somebody like Dave Fitzgerald who doesn't go up to the box to stand down the sideline. You can hear, like, literally hear him G'ing up his players I think that was reflected in Wexford's start. Like, they totally tore into Kilkenny at the start. The hits in the first kind of 5-10 minutes were absolutely savage. But beyond that then, like, I just was watching the Sunday game last night, and Davey, you know, the psychology of a man, like, he will use anything to get his team up. Like, they were up going into half time, and he said on the Sunday game that he told his team at half time, and we're an into the wind team, lads. Like, as if they had an advantage now. Like, he will latch on to anything, and I actually think it's clearly working.
It's the Anthony Cunningham factor you talked about as well, that little bit of thing. And even Clare yesterday, John Milan was on about that he was on radio, and he was like, I was down there outside the dressing room
getting tea, yeah.
The Clare lads are telling you they are up for this, they are really up for this, Marty.
It wasn't Marty for once.
But there is something in that, though. Like, I don't know how, like, as a journalist who's supposed to condemn this stuff, when you saw O'Connor's sideline, how did you feel about it?
I thought the exact as a fan, and this is wrong. Like, as I absolutely should be sent off. He should be suspended for 3 months. And, like, there's no need to be vilified. But if anybody else is going to be, he should be the same as if it was Davy Fitz or anyone else, right? Shouldn't do it. As a fan, I was like,
listen at home.
That kind of thing, you know?
Mix after doing multiple fist pumps to the player manager being sent off.
But you see, there was people who were watching the Sunday game will have heard Joanne says when they played it at halftime, they said, that's not what the Clare fans will want to see, is it? And Dalo says, that's exactly what the Clare fans will want. That's not what Clare need, I think is what she said. And he goes, that's exactly what Clare need, Joanne. And, you know, he went and retracted it or whatever because he was probably told to. But that is how you felt. You felt, look, this was... they needed to show a little bit of fight and passion. And I'm sorry that it's not the right thing to do. It's obviously wrong. And he's rightly going to be punished for it. But what I'm saying is that when you've been beaten by 13 and 18 points 2 weeks in a row and your season has just collapsed into itself, they needed to show that they actually gave a shit. And that's what they did yesterday, yeah?
Yeah, and even I remember Derek McGrath, when he did his coaching conference in Croke Park, he put up a screenshot on the screen at one stage. Just he was talking about his relationship with his team, and they obviously looked to him for a lot. And he was, you know, as much kind of like a father figure as he was as a coach. But he put up a screenshot from when Cork bet them out the gap in the Munster final. And the one thing he highlighted was, look at my body language in this photo. Like, he really was hard, like, self-critical in terms of being stooped, head down, like, reflecting the mood that was on the field, and not kind of like trying to instigate something from the sideline. Like, I thought it was fascinating that he kind of understood the relationship he had with his players and what they needed from him. And it's like, it's really clear from the way people like Fitzgerald conduct himself that thing is, you know, universal.
Yeah, John Kiely fist pumped Limerick to a victory over Cork in last year's 11th semi-final. He 100% fist pumped them to a win. They were down and out, and he just started flailing arms, and all of a sudden Limerick had won the game.
But Davies can work two ways, because Davy can get too angry when he loses it. And obviously people said he got himself sent off on purpose in the last match or whatever, you know, I don't know.
I think he did.
But like, and that's fine. That's maybe he did, maybe he didn't. But like, there was times then, even when O'Hanlon got sent off in the last few minutes against Kelly, where he just lost. It was out of nowhere. And it was like, it was the most obvious foul in the world. It was a clear yellow card. And it was a second yellow and he was gone. And Davy just all of a sudden had lost it, having been quite calm throughout the match, really, you know. And that just, you read about it in the book that he released last year. He says that he's actually calmer than everyone thinks he is, but he loses it like twice a game. And that's the thing that the camera picks up, like, you know. But I always wonder, like, what good is that doing the players? Like, I don't know.
At the same time that was going on in Dublin, there was some high drama as well. Galway obviously being knocked out, not necessarily reason. You got scenes at the end of the game where Galway players are looking at random people's Twitter feeds, like running over to fans to discover what was going on. The biggest talking point, I think, was Conal Keeney, the evergreen Conal Keeney, who was just incredible. Mark, finish this phrase, right? What was there was one adjective used to describe Conal Keeney leaving around Dublin and then copy it for the entire week.
So, an Conal old Keeney is player. Who isn't afraid to get stuck in
combative, yeah.
Yeah, he's a warrior.
a warrior, yeah.
The best thing about that cliche is that it's actually perfect. Like, if you want to phrase this sum up, Keeney, that's it right there.
So Keeney is 37 in September, I think, right? Which is an unbelievable age for this day and age of playing intercounty hurling. Like, you know, you see, we talked earlier in the year about every, you know, you look at the lineups and you'll have one 30-year-old and everyone else will be 24. You know, that's the teams now, like, but...
Or 20.
Yeah, oh, 24 or younger. Sorry, yeah. I should have said, yeah. But, like, you look at his performance and he's still the best player Dublin have. It's remarkable, like, you know, and he's as good as he ever was. And there's a different... I wonder about lads retiring a little bit too soon or... You know, if you don't have the hunger for it, you don't want to go back, that's your decision. You're not getting paid for it. Why would, you know, you don't have to come back. But more feeling that it's passed you by when you're 30, 31. It's like, you can... Experience counts for a lot as well, you know what I mean? You might lose that little bit of pace, but you've played a lot longer than a lot of these lads and you know what way the ball is going to bounce and, you know, you can just be that little bit calmer and everything like that. I'd actually like to see a lot more players just kind of play into their 30s a little bit more and just reinvent themselves. The way Brick, like Brick's reinvented himself three times for Waterford. He's literally had three different phases of his career and the last one is as successful as any, you know? And Keeney definitely playing better than ever. It's brilliant to see, like, because he's just such a... It's also brilliant to see somebody who's known in Dublin for what he did with the footballers who gave up, maybe not in the last couple of years, but the original burst of All-Irelands to go and, you know, pursue his passion and play hurling and all. And I think that Dublin needs more of that, to be honest.
Is there such a thing as, like, well, definitely such a thing, now that I ask it, of, like, this, it's almost ageism that people don't know it, don't realise doing it. It's like that sort of subconscious sexism where it's like, you know, are you going to have a couple of kids now or you're getting married, all those these questions that female athletes have to deal with players like Conor Keeney. Like, I wonder how many times he's asked about retirement, how many times has Bernard Brogan asked about retirement.
Yeah,
you don't go around asking a 17-year-old, well, you might think about starting playing senior football now, will you? Like, it's just that it's assumed once you get to a certain age that's it.
Once you hit 30, I've heard a good few interviews of people saying that, is that suddenly you're hit 30 and you're playing the best football or hurling of your career and every interview is about how long you've left rather than, are you going to win the All-Ireland this year?
It's funny you say that, right? Because I was thinking about this as we were coming in here today and I had a look through Google and I found a brilliant article, I should say. It's really well written. I'm not sure who wrote it, but it's on boz.ie anyway.
Oh, was it written by M. Brosnan by any chance?
It might have been, yeah.
I love how it's like, I was just looking through Google. You're wearing your arse. This article just came into your head straight away.
I just came across this randomly. And
with no premeditation.
This is the end of 2017, right? So you have to think about this in the context of what came after. So just if we quickly reflect on last year for Kerry, they looked dead and buried, came into Monaghan. Probably the moment of the summer was David Clifford's goal, and the man who literally created that was Kieran Donaghy. And this is him. So this was him speaking before this. This is December 2017. And he said, I still feel I can do a job for Kerry and I still enjoy it. So why should I retire? Because society thinks I should retire. Because when you get over 30 in the GAA, they all think you should retire. And he's actually spot on.
That's probably, like, the interview I was thinking of without realizing it.
He's actually spot on. Like, the way players can evolve, or he suddenly became, I think, people might have retired Donaghy as early as 2014. Like, and then he came back in 2015 and suddenly had a massive
Ireland.
Then he was retired again post that and did what he did last summer as well. And you've heard the players talk about his leadership skills off the field and stuff like that as well. Like, my point is that somebody like Conor Keeney, Eddie Brendan's analysis of this was brilliant last night. Like, his game is built on a lot of stuff, kind of psychological stuff, like mentality, aggression, reading space, and like hunting down people. He was never a big score getter, but that's not his job because he does so much more around that. That you can, you know, like, there's this expectation. Maybe it's like a higher standard you expect older players of, but they can still contribute in an immense way as he did.
The other question on Galway, Morris, from a man who doesn't know much, asking a man who supposedly knows a lot, what's going on with Galway?
It's
very harsh of them to go out and score.
I will say that Dublin are a decent side, and there's four good teams in the Leinster Championship, and them going out and score difference. Like, I'll just preface in what you say. Obviously, they're not at their peak that we were talking about this time last year when the Beck Kilkenny, you know, but they're not that far off.
Yeah, this is a very, like, very boring answer, but I also think it's the accurate one. Like, Galway missed out by like a couple of percent. I mean, literally a couple of percent in terms of their score difference. That was it. Like, they threw a game away, in my opinion, against Wexford.
Absolutely.
Had a really quick turnaround for a game against Kilkenny. I think, you know, I still think they wouldn't have been that far away if they'd gotten through Leinster. But ultimately, what's going on with Galway? They lost their best player. They're comfortably their best player. Struggled to find the role for him post that. trying to introduce a lot of young players. But like, the compared to their footballers, like, Galway hurling isn't in crisis. I really hope Micheál Donoghue doesn't go on there. I think, like, as a whole, I think, like, this, that's elite level sport. Like, it's fine margins. They,
has it actually been more beneficial to them this year? Even in, maybe possibly, this could be a stupid question, but it's in a strange way, even though they've gone out of Leinster, this year is more beneficial to them than last year because of the fact that last year they sauntered through the league, didn't really uncover anyone, whereas this year they've been training in some new players, and the fact that they're missing Canning for so long that it kind of forced their hand a little to try and develop something else.
Yeah, you'd, I mean, you'd hope so. I mean, I think, Mick, we spoke with this earlier. You thought last year might do that for a couple of young players as well, and it still took a bit of time to ring out that. Even the break might do them good. Like, I'm sure New York and Boston would be glad to see a lot of hurlers out of the championship already.
Johnny Glynn could go home now after booking the summer off.
There's Galway hurlers who've been, I think, a couple of times invited to play with the Galway footballers. Like, that'll be an interesting side subplot to all of this. Like, the Burke is 100% good enough, 100% good enough to play intercounty football. Yeah. In my own opinion as well, I think John Hambry as a cornerback, like, they're just two players I know who they would be thereabouts if they weren't playing hurling. That's a subplot. Burke actually in 2014, Galway went out early and Burke made the swatch that year as well and came off the bench. So and he's a year of for this club, the year's football under is about two.
Joe is 31 and, you know, has been playing like non-stop since he's about 17. Like, I know he didn't miss a full year. It wasn't like a crucial or anything like that. He played all the way through the league, and even he's back and played the second half the other day. But I wonder if, like, if they weren't going to do anything this year anyway, if Joe missing a year... If Joe missing a year of cutting trust to the championship does him any harm either at this stage, you know what I mean? And it's like, we're talking about Keeney there at 36, you know, there's probably 2-3 years left in Canning still, you know what I mean? And maybe you bought yourself an extra year, or like, there's a possibility of that too. Sure, I don't think it does any harm.
Look at Tip this year, and Galway are probably in a more positive place than Tipperary were this year and last year. Now look at the response they've got.
On the Galway heartbreak before we go, so I went out on Saturday night. I had to go to a birthday dinner and drinks, and I was determined to come home and watch the match, not knowing either result, but Wexford and
Kilkenny. Don't tell me my mother called your door and ruined it on you as well.
No, if people weren't following Mark's Twitter a couple of weeks ago, your mother ruined the result of Donegal and Throne.
Yeah, she did.
I took your phone off, you know, radio off, all of that, quite literally, and I took that as my example to what to do. Went out and like had dinner and like only a drink or so afterwards. My wife wasn't drinking, so we had the car and everything was quiet. But the game was on. Went into the only pub in Dublin where anybody cared about the hurling, seemingly. But thankfully, it was down. But it was on about 5 TVs, so I had my back to it. When they showed the Dublin goals, the pub exploded, or the Dublin, you know, as time went on. So, grand, I knew that Dublin were in it at least anyway, but didn't know anything about Kilkenny and Wexford. And we went out anyway. My wife is a Galway woman who was quite devastated, but holding it together well. She somehow didn't give it away, but eventually did say Dublin won. Now, I didn't think she was up on the permutations, so I said to her, the car, I said, don't worry. I said, Galway are still true unless it's a draw between Kilkenny and Wexford, which she knew well it happened. But I have to give her the praise of a lifetime in that she didn't give any inclination whatsoever. So she went to bed, I watched the match, and as it was a draw, I kind of looked through the ceiling upstairs.
Fair play.
When I realized that Galway were out.
That's the OG, when talk about Munster quickly, like, to what extent, Mick, do you think you can read anything into what, like, Leinster was obviously incredible, and I think you learned a lot about teams at the weekend particularly. Could you learn anything from what happened in Munster this weekend?
No, I can learn that Tipperary could have done without losing Cottle Barrett and Bonner Maher, because those two players basically, you know, Tip have more or less the same group of players they've had for a few years, but when they're firing, those two players are always important for them. Yeah. But they tend to not fire a lot of the time, so losing them when they're in form is a massive deal.
Can I just come in on that really, really quickly on that, right? That's an interesting point you made on that, because I was reading the John Fogarty has an article in the Irish Examiner today that the weather came dreadful after the game started, so the weather massively deteriorated, and he was wondering, should the GAA introduce a period where in a situation like that players can go and change their boots, like collectively can go and change their boots, right? And if you think about it, I went back and looked through this on Sportsfile. So Cottle Barrett has worn mixed studs all throughout the year. So he's wearing Mowgli sash studs. throughout the year. That's what he's worn in his boots, and he was wearing a pair of Kovas at the weekend. And the way, like, I'm not, maybe this is just total nonsense, but the way he tore his hamstring, he kind of overstretched, like he overslipped. Like the boots might not have helped him in a scenario like that. We spoke about either on air and off air about Ryan O'Neill against Cavan
changing his boots. Multiple times.
Yeah, multiple times, just because of the way the conditions are. I just, like, I wonder, it's a, whatever,
like
you can
Formula
really,
One where they come in for the wet tires, like they have to do that. And
but like, I think every player, from what I've just looking through photos after I read that column earlier today, every player bar Morrissey and Galan, both of them were moldies, and you could actually see Morrissey was slipping and sliding all sides. Like, he looked like he was wearing
Morrissey and Galan
wore moldies for this game, but nearly everybody else had proper studs. Like, so like the other example, actually, just on Maher actually was wearing studs, so you can't, you know, like in the rain, like, an injury isn't just purely down to boots there's a combination of factors. But just as an interesting side plot that I guess the importance of footwear, like, and we saw that with Ryan O'Neill, like that was the classic example. But it's something that, particularly when weather deteriorates as quick as it does, that maybe that's worth bearing consideration. That's just I don't know if you can read Anthony into the weekend, but if you can, it's the importance of good boots.
For me, Limerick, it was bad conditions, which I don't think suits them and suits their style of play. And I thought that they got poorer as the game went on. But then again, they had played 3 weeks in a row. Tip were off last week. It wasn't a must win. So I don't think you can read anything into that game, really, right? I think Cork didn't know that they didn't have to win that game, and it would worry me if from their point of view that they kind of, even when they got it back to a point and all the momentum was on their side, Clare got the next four scores and won by five. You know, so that would worry me from their point of view. And then just but again, you don't know. Like, I mean, away game in a hard place to go against a team who are up for it and probably played more to their potential than they have in previous weeks. So it's not a disaster to lose to Clare either, the real Clare, you know? And then the only thing you can read into it is for 2020, because, like, you talk about Galway not being in a bad place. Clare, like, it was start again stuff if they didn't put in a performance this week. And ultimately, they put in a huge performance. It was really, really proud of the team. All the big players kind of stood up, plus a couple of young lads. Like Dermot Ryan had his best game for Clare. He's 19, one for the future. So there's lots of things like that you would think, you know, there's a lot of positives, whether it's with a new management team or whatever. At least they can go into getting together now in December as a kind of a group with, right, this is what we can do. Let's try and, you know, get to the next level.
Clare's win didn't matter, but Kerry's definitely did.
Yeah.
That was, firstly, a really enjoyable game to watch.
Yeah.
Enjoyable in the sense that for the first kind of 25 minutes, it was quite obvious that both teams were really nervous, but understandably so, given what was at stake.
Yeah.
And then you could actually see the way they began to outmaneuver each other. And as soon as Kerry often went down 40 men quite early, and Kerry then actually played with like an extra layer of attack, so that when the ball was going in long, they'd players to attack off their shoulders, which is kind of clever. So you saw, like, they'd go inside to Boyle or Goulding and then have players like Conway or these names like Jordan running off their shoulders and attacking off it. And it became kind of like a kind of intriguing in that sense as well, even if the first like 25 minutes quality wasn't there, it quickly developed after that.
Yeah, I thought it was brilliant. I really only saw the second half in detail, so, but like Mark was saying earlier about us always giving out about TV coverage and praising the radio, GA Now is an unbelievable service. Like, and I don't know if people even know about it enough, you know. And I know they had some problems and the stream was down and they lost it at the end. That'll all be fixed in time, and the fact that they're even trying to show it is impressive enough to me. And they had like full commentary teams, like, you know, Seamus Hickey was there with the main commentator, so it was like an enjoyable occasion to watch. You weren't stuck on one camera angle or anything like that. You felt like you were just watching a normal game.
Yeah.
So, like, I mean, for that alone, I think we should sing from the rooftops that these games were available on and people should watch them next year, because what I've really took away from it is that this is a really good competition. And we've been talking about it for so long, but like Offaly it's a disaster what happened to them, right? But like Offaly still have five or six top quality hurlers. Kerry definitely do. Kerry, I would say, have six or seven. The problem is when you're from a county like that, you're never going to have 15 together. So those players are never going to be able to compete with the top teams. It doesn't mean they're not as good as top players, though.
Yeah.
And if you look Conway, I think if Conway was still hitting frees now, he wouldn't miss one. He was hitting them from everywhere on the field. He was unbelievable performance. Like,
I remember there was a rumor about a year ago, or maybe slightly longer, that when he was in UC, he was going to transfer and play for Cork. And after watching him play a couple of times this year, he would start in that Cork team. There's no question about it. Just on that point, right? Like, there's so much attention, rightly attention devoted to Offaly's blight and whatever went on with Joe Bergen being dropped during the week and bringing him on after 15 minutes. It just looked bad.
Yeah, everything is wrong, to be honest.
Yeah, or duty. But the most encouraging thing I think out of watching a game like that is that there's like that they're basically national names anyway. But it's players below that suddenly we get to see a guy like Conroy live, or on the other side, Oisin Kelly for Offaly, and it was incredible. And his stick, he's a great sticks man, Mark. You'd be happy to hear. To see those kind of guys, it kind of like there's more than one merit to this competition.
Definitely, yeah. And that's, I think, the more games you can watch, the better. And I've been guilty of not seeing it. You know, the last 3 weeks I've been on. It's Saturday afternoon. Again, you know it's there, but you're not sitting down to watch it. Saturday was that important game that you kind of had to see. And because of that, I'll be making time for that on Saturday afternoon next year now. You know what I mean? And it's a class competition. I'm really looking forward to the final of it as well. Because they drew, Westmead and Leash drew, but I think that was a bit of shadow boxing, really.
Right, we're nearly out of time. But speaking of finals, Mark, are you excited? It's the week getting going.
Ha, finally, right. We're into a bit of analysis.
Dublin Meads, yeah.
No, forget about that.
Sorry, Cork Kerry, the big game, the Munster final.
The Ulster football final, Cavan and Donegal. Right, I have three things I want to talk about here, right? Firstly,
this was a mistake. We'll talk to you next week.
No, hold on.